Okay, so how many people here have read the Old Testament all the way through at least once? Of course. Wait, who was it again? Right, keep raising your hand. Okay, awesome, awesome. Okay, read it again, guys. You're never gonna stop learning, right? Okay, so how many people have read part of the Old Testament? Like about 50% or so. You see, my hand is raised on this one. And how many people just struggle reading the Old Testament? Even with people who have read it again, right? So, or even the people who have like only read like part way, like how many people here can just like, if I give you a book of the Bible, you be able to tell me like the main events or the characters in it or like kind of what's going on in it? Like kind of? No. All right. Like if I were like, First Chronicles. What's that one about? I actually know what it's about, but. Yeah, exactly. So there's no shame or judgment, by the way, in like any of those questions. It's not like I'm like, oh, you guys haven't read it. That's so awful. No, there's no shame or judgment. Seriously, you guys are not the only ones who haven't read all of the Old Testament. Yeah, well, you're right, Tom. So the reason I'm asking these questions is because it's come to my attention that not many people in this generation really know the Old Testament. And I know a lot of people, and most of those are Christian, who have no problem studying the New Testament, but struggle with studying the Old. Why is that? So I came up with some of these reasons. This is just actually some of the reasons that I come across most often. And the first common reason that I get all the time is it's boring and hard to read, which that's like a very common thing. I hear everybody say that. The second reason is that was the old way of doing things. Why would I need to read it when I have Jesus? I'm not a Jew. The third reason, like, God is scary and mean in the Old Testament, and it makes me uncomfortable. Or it's primitive and outdated, and it doesn't really apply to me. And I think the real reason why people feel this way about the Old Testament is because they really don't understand it or know it. Or they don't really know why they need to read it. Or even how to approach reading or studying it. And my goal is to encourage and motivate all of you to study the Old Testament by showing you the importance of it, of studying it, and giving you some information that can help you when you study the Old Testament. My goal is to not make you feel awful about yourself or that you're not smart enough or that if you don't read the Old Testament, you aren't saved, because that's far from the truth. We all know that we're saved by faith through grace, okay? I don't even expect any one of you to go home tonight, read the Old Testament all the way through, and like totally get it, or anything that is being said, or be able to relate to everything that is written to it. And I also hope that you don't make reading the Old Testament a competition, like where you try to read and obtain all the information that you can as possible in like a short amount of time. Like, I must know everything, so I must speed read through this and read 10 chapters a day. I am begging you, please don't do that. Like, please do not do that. It would be a waste of your time. It can affect you spiritually and mentally and just emotionally. And doing that way is like cramming for a test where, like, you know, all you do it the night before and like all you care about is absorbing as much information as you can in one night. You're just going to forget about it, like the majority of it, the next day when it really matters. Like, seriously, guys, I know what it's like. I've been in college for 6 years. Just don't do that. And just a side note, though, if you are really struggling reading the Bible, like on a daily basis, even the Old Testament, I just wouldn't recommend reading the Bible in a year plan, because that can become very legalistic with those plans. Like, it becomes a checklist of I have to do it for that day, instead of reading the Bible with the attitude of I get to come before God and to spend time with him and to know him more. I mean, don't get me wrong. Bible plans are really, really great and can help you be disciplined, but I just wouldn't recommend setting a time limit on when you need to get it done, because like that can also make you feel rushed. And when you do that, you don't really get a chance for God to come in and be like, this is what you should know about me, and you're not really spending time with him. And like, yeah, you just rush through reading it and not realizing how much you missed out on it because you weren't taking the time to understand it. And something that I've recently realized is that, do you guys notice that Jesus never ran anywhere? Like, you never hear in the New Testament that then Jesus and his disciples ran this way or rushed to Jerusalem or ran to save the dying child, right? He walked. He always walked, even in dire situations where he begged a dying, he was begged to heal a dying child. And he walked, right? In that situation, he's just like, oh, hey, no, hang on. And then he stopped to perform a miracle, right? And when he didn't walk, he rode on a donkey. Watch out, you know, those fast-moving donkeys. It kind of reminds me of like the Austin Powers movie, the first one, where they're like, no! And they're like really far away. But anyway, so donkey's a walking animal, right? So what? Just learn from that. It's always better to do things at a pace that God has called you to, even if that just means reading one verse a day or one passage. I mean, if you can do the read the Bible in a year plan and you get a lot out of it and you understand it, great. Like, you do you, guys. I'm not saying that those things are awful, but if you already struggle with understanding what's written in it, like you read a chapter and you're like, I don't know, that may not be like the best route for you to follow, just saying. And I just don't want any of you guys to think that you have to understand everything about the Bible quickly or in a certain amount of time. Like, well, I've been a Christian for X number of years and I haven't gotten that far in the Bible and now Megan's making me feel bad because I should be at her level and I'm not. Like, seriously, guys? I'm not an expert of the Bible. Like I said, I haven't even read the whole Bible. And I started learning stories from the Bible since I was 2, through kids' books, radio programs, TV shows, my aunt and my grandma constantly telling stories of the Bible to me. So I was like 9 when I actually started to read the Bible. So considering I'm gonna be 26 in June, I've had almost 24 years to get to the point that I'm at today, and I haven't even read all of the prophets and some of the writings of poetry because, oh gosh, guys, poetry, it's very difficult for me. It takes a lot of time for me to kind of grasp what the author is saying. Like, honestly, it's a miracle I made it through Job. Can we just, like, take the time? I made it through Job, guys. I'm still recovering from that, so please pray for me. But yeah, so keep that in mind as we go through this, that everyone's at their own pace. Learning from the Bible takes a lifetime. You will never stop learning from God's word. And my other goal is not to bore you, but I could probably guarantee that I will bore you because it's a topic that most people find boring, so I'm sorry about that. Anyway, has anyone ever picked up a book? And I could kind of like just stop there. Like, they would ever picked up a book? No. Has anyone ever picked up the book, read the first few pages, got bored, and just read the ending or near the ending to see what happens? I have. Yeah, right? Right? I did a lot, and especially in school. Okay, so you know the ending now. Great. This doesn't mean that you know how the ending happened. And if you were to just put the book down from there, again, sure, you know that it ends happily or whatever, but you'd be missing out on a lot of information that could make the ending and the whole book more impactful. You can read that ending multiple times over and over again, but unless you read the whole book, you wouldn't be able to fully understand it. And unfortunately, this is how a lot of people study the Bible today. They read the first few chapters in Genesis, get bored or whatever, or have a hard time understanding it, and just read the New Testament. Some people don't even bother with the old and just read the new. And I want to point out that there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with reading the New Testament before you read the old. Like, actually, it's encouraged. Like, do that. I was one of those people who read the first few chapters, got really, like, confused, especially the part, I got to the part with Lot and his daughters, and I was like, got really, really scared, and then I skipped to the New Testament. But when we think it's okay to just stop there, that's where we have a problem. Reading the ending beforehand is supposed to make us inspired to go back to the beginning of the book and see how it all plays out and how it got there. And for those who have read the ending of the book, right, first and went back to read the whole thing, did you notice that it helped you to understand the ending better? Maybe it answered a lot of questions that you may or may not realize that you have. Okay, so maybe some people in here are like, I can't relate to you, Megan, because I don't know what a book is, okay? So let me give you another example. Imagine a group of people getting together, just sharing quotes from a movie or a Netflix series, and they claim to be fans of it, but have never actually seen it. They may have seen clips or scenes from it, but they never watched the entire thing and don't even want to watch it. Wouldn't that be a little strange? And it's not like they're getting together to discuss a trailer for a movie, trying to figure out what will happen before they go see it. that would be more normal because they have an intent of watching the movie once it comes out, or not an intent if they're just like, no, that trailer sucks, man, I'm not going to go see that. But this first group has no intent of watching it, either because the beginning seemed boring and hard to understand, or they tried watching it, but it was too violent for them, so they skipped it. But they're claiming to be huge fans of it, and even recommend it to others. And when others ask them about watching the whole thing, their response is, well, I know how it begins and how it ends. There's really no point in watching the whole thing. But you're promoting it, saying how much it's changed your life. In fact, you say your life is based on it. How could you not want to watch the whole thing? Does this example remind you guys of anyone? So my question to you guys is this. What is the whole Bible about? It's about Jesus, right? God's rescue plan for us is what I like to call it. I just like thinking of it as like, this is what I've done for you, Megan. This is how I'm doing it. So I just like thinking of it that way. But ever since Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, God put into action a rescue plan for our relationship to be restored with him. Everything that has happened in the Old Testament points to Jesus. Jesus and the rest of the writers in the New Testament used the Old Testament to explain who he was, what he was doing, why he was doing it. Jesus references the Old Testament all the time because he's showing God's people that he is the Messiah the Old Testament is referring to. So there's a story that I'm going to share. It's in the Bible, of course. This is kind of where I think that Jesus really hits the point of you guys need to be reading the Old Testament. And it's in Luke chapter 24. It starts at verse 13. I'm not going to go through it completely. I'm just going to give you guys like a summary and then point out some scriptures because we don't got time for that. So you guys can read it on your own. But basically it's about these two disciples of Jesus. I think it's two disciples. I don't know. Probably just followers of Jesus. One of them was called Cleopas and the other guy, we don't even get a name. But they were walking and they were talking about the things that are happening that day. And then that day was the resurrection of Jesus. Okay, so he rose from the dead. He got out of the tomb. And, you know, the story goes from there. So basically, they were talking about what's going on, and Jesus walks up to them, and they don't recognize him. They're kept from recognizing him, and they're like, hey, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, well, you don't know the latest gossip? And he's like, no, like, what are you guys talking about? He's like, well, it's about Jesus of Nazareth. Like, he was a prophet, you know? He came here. We thought that they crucified him. We thought that he was going to be our king. He was going to save us and redeem Israel. But he died. And now he rose again. And there's all these women going around saying, oh my gosh, yeah, Jesus rose from the dead. And in verse 25, it says this. He said to them, how foolish are you? And how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken? Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in the scriptures concerning himself. And then they go and they're like, hey, stay with us. And he's like, okay. So he stays with them. And then when he was, this is verse 30. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? And then they went back to Jerusalem, right? And then they told all the disciples what were happening, and the disciples came up, were like, oh my gosh, really? And as they were talking about this, Jesus walks up and says, hey guys. And they're like, oh my gosh, and they're all freaking out. And then in verse 44, it says, he said to them, this is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. Then he opened their minds so that they can understand scriptures. What I love about this is that they didn't realize who Jesus was until after, number one, he told them about the scriptures, which is the Old Testament, by the way, and then two, after he broke the bread. So whenever I think about Jesus breaking the bread, I think about the Passover when Jesus broke the bread and told his disciples, this is my body. That was Jesus' way of telling them that he would be sacrificed for their sins, that he is the Messiah, that he is the Lamb, right? And Cleopas and this other guy realized at that moment who Jesus really was, because of all they have learned about from the scriptures, started to connect to Jesus's life, and they finally started to understand. So the more that we read the Old Testament, the more we understand who Jesus is and what God has done for us to get to him, to get to that point. And it's amazing. So the Old Testament is not a book about how God wasted his time before Jesus came to the world. I know a lot of people are like, well, then if God really wanted to rescue us, then how come he just didn't send Jesus right away and just have it all done and, you know, we could all just be restored in relationship with him? Like, why did he have to go through all of this? And the reason that God didn't send a savior right away, right after Adam and Eve fell in the garden, is because he wanted to show us his character, his holiness, and his love for us. He showed us how high his standards are and how impossible it is for us to measure up to them. He showed us his love and his faithfulness through his messed up children. There were so many times in the Old Testament where God's children were unfaithful to him and did a lot of stupid, sinful things. Like, every time, seriously. But every single time, God showed his commitment to them, that he would never leave or forsake them. Even when Israel looked like it was dead and would be gone forever, God was still with them. He planted that seed. And if anyone wants to know, that was referencing Isaiah chapter 6. You guys should read the Old Testament. Just saying. So going back to that example about that group of people who were fans of the movie that they never watched, my point to that example is this. If we are to represent Christ as believers, and the whole Bible is about God, about Jesus, shouldn't we desire to know more about who we represent? And that's the reason why we need to read the Old Testament, to know more about God, about Jesus, and God's plan for us. But God's scary in the Old Testament, right? I mean, look at some of the things that God did in the Old Testament, and it's so easy for us to think that God is mean. Like, seriously, God told Moses to stone a guy to death for picking up sticks on the Sabbath. What? Right? It's hardcore, right? And he told Saul to wipe out a whole race of people and to leave none alive, not even the women, children, or infants. That's intense. Does God have a bad temper or something? Does he love violence? I was one of those people where I view God as scary and mean in the Old Testament, and reading some of the stories about his wrath made me uncomfortable. I used to think that Jesus softened God, like a father when he has a son. His son can make him a more loving and compassionate person if they're a good father. But I was wrong. I was so wrong. God is never changing. He is the same now as he has been forever. And God is the same God in the New Testament as he is in the Old. So if you love the God in the New Testament, that's the same God in the Old Testament. He never changed. And when you realize that, your whole perspective of the Bible changes. Every time you see God's wrath, it's never because God hates that person or that group of people. It's because sin deserved death, the death that Jesus took for us. He wanted to show us how serious our sin is and how badly we need a savior. I remember the first time that God opened my eyes to his love in the Old Testament. A little over 2 years ago, I was reading Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve sinned in the garden. Immediately after God curses Adam and Eve in verse 21, God made them clothes before sending them away. Like, guys, I cried when I read this, because to me it was God's way of saying, yeah, you messed up big time, and this is what will happen to you because of what you have done, but I still love you, and even though I know you are beautiful the way you are, I know you're ashamed, so I'm going to provide for you and your needs. I seriously broke down after that. I have read this story probably about 50 times before this, and I didn't see it until that day. And as I continued reading, I found I couldn't stop seeing God's love. It was everywhere. I even found God's love in the list of names. How many here hates coming across those lists of names? You know, you get to the Bible, it's like, oh my gosh, and you just want to like roll your eyes because you're like, who are these people? I have no idea. So I was reading Nehemiah, right? where there's a list of names of people who returned from the Babylonian exile and to help build the wall. No, it wasn't the wall. It was the temple. No, it was the wall. It was the wall. All right. I realized that even though I have no clue who they were, God knows. Those people matter to God. They're important to God. They are loved by God. And these people were not just names to God. They were individuals to him. So whenever I come across a list of names, I remember this. I may just be a name to someone. There are many, many people in my life. Actually, there's just many, many people that will never know me or even care to know me. There will be people in my life that push me off to the side like I am not worth their time. But I am not a name to God. God knows me intimately and loves me deeply, just as he had known and loved the people who are listed in the Bible. These people matter because they matter to God. And when you read the Old Testament or just the Bible in general, and you come across a list of names and you have no clue who anyone is in that list, I hope you remember this. And that brings me to my second reason why it's important for us to read the Old Testament and the Bible in general. Reading the Bible transforms you. There's a quote I absolutely love that I got from the Bible Project. It says, "The more you read the Bible, the more the Bible reads you." I just want to put that quote on like a bumper sticker or a t-shirt or something because I just love it. It's so true. And just saying, by the way, this is like a resource on there. I'm going to explain it right here. I love the Bible Project. Like, honestly, it has helped me so much with my study of the Bible. And I recommend watching their videos. Currently, they're doing a study on how to read the Bible, where they talk about different kinds of literature in the Bible and how to recognize it and how the Jews read it. And if you are into that, they have a Bible. They have a video on every single book of the Bible that summarizes what that book is about and how it's structured through drawings. And they have theme videos and word studies. Seriously, it's an amazing resource. It's hashtag not sponsored, but I highly recommend it. It's on YouTube, but anyway, back to the quote. So the more we read the Bible, the more we see our lives and ourselves in it. There are so many times where I was reading the Bible and the stories and the characters were just so familiar. Like, seriously, I don't know if anybody has ever felt that way, but I sure have. It was like they were playing out my life in a different way. Like, wait a minute, I'm like King Saul. He was a people pleaser and I want to please people. He got jealous of King David. I get jealous of people. I'm more terrified of people and what they think about me or do to me instead of just trusting God, just like Saul, right? And then I get to the ending of 1 Samuel where Saul dies. Oh, sorry, spoiler alert, Saul dies, but also another spoiler alert, pretty much everybody in the Bible except Jesus is dead, so I'm sorry, but... Anyway, I'm reading the ending of 1 Samuel where Saul dies. I'm like, ooh, I do not want to end up like that. So I start learning from his mistakes and from the trusting heart of David. And these stories start to transform me into the person that God has called me to be. Something I may not have seen if I didn't read them. It's about growth. So the more we learn about God, the more we learn about ourselves. And the way that, you know, we would do that, we would learn those things, is actually through meditating or dwelling on what we've read. The Bible is actually what's kind of referred to as the Jews' meditation literature. And the way that the Jews would study the Bible is through meditation. And no, I don't mean that they got all together with their yoga mats and did yoga and got into that one pose and like started breathing deeply and started chanting as they cleared their minds. They would actually slowly read the Bible and dwell on it. They would mutter it to themselves daily. They would deeply think about what they read and reflect on it. And by the way, I know I've mentioned the word study a lot at this point, and I know that it freaks people out. I mean, I freak out when I hear that word because it reminds me of schoolwork and having to study for a test. I went through 6 years of college. I do not want to study, research, or write essays anymore. I'm done with school. But when I look at the word study and I realize what that word means, I realize that it's not that scary. Does anyone know the definition of study or to study? No? Okay, that's fine. I don't care. No, so it means the devotion of time and attention to acquiring knowledge. And online it did say through books, but I'm leaving that part out for now. So the devotion of time and attention to acquiring knowledge. So what does that mean? All studying really means is taking the time and effort to get to know something or someone. And when you think about it, don't we study all the time? Like, when you watch a movie or a TV show, you're studying it. When you get a new phone or a piece of technology, you're studying it. When you hang out with your friends or spouse or significant other, you're studying them. And when you really enjoy your company, does it really take that much effort to want to get to know them more? Maybe at first, right? As time goes on, the more that you get to know that person, the more you grow deeper in relationship with them. And it's easier to devote time and attention to them because you enjoy being around them. And I'm not saying it'll always be easy. There may be struggles or seasons where it's hard to spend time with them, but ultimately, if you like that person, the desire of devoting time to know them more won't fade. And right when you think you know everything about them, you find out something about them you didn't know, like, oh, I thought I knew you. You know, it's amazing. So when I say study the Bible, don't think of it as work. Think of it as a relationship. Think of it as an opportunity to know more about the one who loves you, growing deeper in relationship with him. So you can learn more about who you are through knowing where and who you came from. All right, Megan, we get it. It's important for us to read the Bible, but I still don't get it. I still don't understand it. I got you guys. For starters, we cannot just pick up the Bible and read it like it is any other book off of our shelves. This is a very ancient and sacred book, and I think part of the reason why people in America today, in general, just find the Old Testament difficult to understand, because the Bible is not written as American literature is written. The way the Bible is written is not the type of writing we are taught to read in school growing up. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've never had to read a book where there are chapters of lists of a bunch of names that I don't know, and then all of a sudden there's a story with characters who most of the time have very minimal character descriptions. Like, seriously, most of the time we just get their names and we're supposed to know what their character is based on that. And there are so many characters. And then, as I'm reading the story, and now we take a break for a poem. Now back to the story where our characters are having a philosophical debate in a poem. But before we go on any further, here's another long list of names of people who were there that you know nothing about. Oh, and here's a long, exhaustive legal document. And an instruction manual that is harder to follow than the one from IKEA. Oh, look, another poem. Okay, so you get, I may be exaggerating a bit, but you get my point. Never in my life have I read a book that is anything like the Bible. And I don't think I'm supposed to. If the whole Bible is about God and shows who he is, then the Bible is a gateway for me to get to know him more. This book is the foundation for my beliefs. It is the most reliable resource I have to base my life on. It's my food source that I need for my daily life. So the Bible is the living word of God. So that means I cannot treat it like a textbook or a fiction novel or a Shakespearean play or whatever you guys read on your, I don't know what you guys read. I don't know. Or if you guys even read. But since the Bible is extremely important, we need to understand the structure and the context of it before we dive in. And so the Old Testament, by the way, I think a lot of people that I know personally, they're like, well, I just don't get how it applies to me. Like, I get it's important and, you know, all this stuff. I want to make something clear here. The Old Testament is not written in the way the New Testament is. In fact, it was in different languages. So, you know, there's that. But the Old Testament is descriptive. It describes who God is and the characters and all that stuff. And the New Testament is more, this is how you live a Christian life. This is, I mean, it talks about Jesus and what he did for us, but most of the time Paul is like, hey, if you guys want to know how churches run, here's how. And you can be like, great, I know how this applies to me. But the Old Testament is not like that. You have to ask, instead of asking, like, how does this apply to me right off the bat, think, what can I learn about God from this? Or what character attributes can I get from God from this? So a question I probably should have asked from the beginning, but I didn't, because, you know, It's just me. What does anyone here know what the word testament means? Because I talked about it. I said it like 50 times probably, like 100 times. Anybody know? So in this context, it means covenant, which is an oath or a promise. It's an agreement between two parties. So the Bible then is organized into two main sections, the old promise and the new promise. Does anybody here kind of know what the old promise could be referring to? Yes, exactly. It's the law. Awesome, Ian. That was awesome. Good job. Gold star. Okay. So God wanted to demonstrate to his people his expectation of how to serve him. So he created a physical kingdom. He was showing people how to serve God, right? And what is the new promise? Jesus, right? You whispered it, but yes, it's right. Jesus, yes, our man, right? So God can now be accessed by anyone who calls on him through his spirit. He created a spiritual kingdom. I actually kind of like this, is kind of going off track, but I really like the part where when Jesus dies, the temple curtain was split in two. It's like that thing of, well, this is no longer a physical kingdom, it's a spiritual kingdom. I just like that. All right, so I handed out the study guide. Great, Megan. Awesome. Sorry, I have a note here that says handout guide. I already did that, so I'm on track. So, all right, now we're going to get to the guide that I handed you guys out. So there are 39 books in the Old Testament, and these books are not in chronological order. If you guys take anything out of my teaching, I hope that it is that is what you take out of it, that the Bible is not written in chronological order. I don't have a whole lot of time to discuss the chronological order, unfortunately, but if you want to know the order, you can research it, or you can get a Bible that's in chronological order. I'm just not going to cover that. But there is a structure and organization to the Old Testament that is super easy to understand, in my opinion, and that's why I give you guys this guide, because most of what I will tell you will go in one ear and out the other. So you guys can keep that guide or look over it or whatever. I worked really hard on it, so if you guys don't, you will offend me. I'm kidding, I'm really not gonna be offended, but yeah, you can totally do it. So I'm gonna go through this guide. So basically, there are three main sections of the Old Testament. There's actually, this way of doing it is actually the breakdown of the New Testament as well, but we're not talking about the New Testament. I love you, New Testament, but we're not talking about you today. So we have the history, which is Genesis through Esther, the poetry or the writings, which is Job through Song of Songs or Song of Solomon, and prophecy, Isaiah through Malachi. And yeah, let's just get right into it. By the way, when I say that these books are not in chronological order, it doesn't mean that like these sections that you can't read them in chronological order. Well, some of them. It's just like, I mean, Genesis through maybe about 2 Kings is pretty good. You're like, yeah, okay, I get this. And then you get to 1 Chronicles and you're like, wait a second, I read this already. And then all of a sudden you get to Job and it's like, wait a second, Job happened in like Genesis or a little after Genesis and before Exodus. It gets really confusing. But anyway, I'm just saying that you guys can read like the historical books and kind of grasp an understanding of the timeline of it. So I just wanted to make that clear. So anyway, the first section that I have is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Know these books, guys. This is called the Torah or the Pentateuch. So the Torah, I didn't write this down, but it actually means instruction. And Pentateuch means five books, or the first five books. And these five books are so, so important to the Israelites. So basically, kind of think of the Gospels, like how that is for the New Testament, how important that is. And that's basically the Torah to the Israelites. These were so important. So this section includes the creation of the world, which includes Noah, which includes Adam and Eve, which includes like all that stuff, Tower of Babel. God's promise to Abraham and his family, the story of Moses walking in the wilderness, and the law of the Israelites. And these books became the foundation of the beliefs for God's people. So next we have the historical books. And by the way, Genesis through Deuteronomy is a historical books, but they're called differently because they were super important, just saying. So anyway, I'm going to give you guys like the shortest, like, or the quickest time. Like, I don't even know how to even like say this right now, but it's basically, I'm just going to give you the fastest history of the Israelites ever. Are you guys ready? All right. So Joshua leads the Israelites to the promised land, or Canaan. He has 12 temporary leaders. God appoints 12 leaders, or judges. I wonder what that one is in, right? To try to help the Israelites follow God in his ways, but fail. God appoints Saul, the king of Israel, but he disobeys God. So God appoints David as king of Israel, makes a covenant with him. Solomon becomes king when David dies, and the nation of Israel is divided in two because he likes keeping horses and a lot of wives, and they just didn't have enough room, so they split. The northern kingdom is called Israel, which gets super confusing when you read the prophecies because you're like, wait, are we talking about Israel or are we talking about Israel? But Israel, the northern kingdom, rules over 10 tribes, and the southern kingdom called Judah is ruling over two tribes. And the two tribes that they rule over are Judah and Benjamin, little Benjamin. The Assyrian exile that basically like took the northern kingdom, and the Babylonian exile that took the southern kingdom, and then the return of the Israelites thanks to King Cyrus and the Persian Empire and the rebuilding of God's temple in the city of Jerusalem. There you go. Ta-da. We all know the whole story, everything now. You guys are good. All right, so that's the historical part. And I know that a lot of times, when I was a kid and I was wanting to read the Old Testament, I just did not like history. History was like my worst subject. That and science, they were my worst subjects. But it's important for us to understand the history because everything is based off of it, right? It is so, so crucial. So really, on your own time, like, get to know these events. And in fact, if you guys are just wanting to just read the Old Testament, study this stuff, because it is super important. So now we get to the next section, which is the writings or the wisdom literature. These are basically, they're just like a bunch of poetry stuff. I mean, not saying that this is the only section that poetry is in it, because poetry is like, I think, a third of the Bible, and it can be anywhere in the books. But these are just like the main, what they're considered the writing sections. So Job's Proverbs and Ecclesiastes are considered wisdom literature, and these books address the question of how to live a good life. And Psalms is a collection of psalms, poems, prayers that come from all different periods in Israel's history that are written by many different authors. So that's fun and gets confusing. Like, who's writing this? I have no idea. So Song of Song or Song of Solomon, I'm just going to give you guys a straight up thing of this. I love you. I love you too. The end. That's basically it. You guys don't even need to read it. No, I'm kidding. Read it, please. So then we have the next section, which is the prophets. And I'm not going to get into like, oh, this prophet was in this time and this prophet was in this time. Because honestly, I don't really know, actually. So I'm sorry. But this section, first of all, does anyone know? I mean, now you guys know because you guys have the guide. But the word prophet actually means those called by God to speak for him. I know a lot of people, when they hear the word prophet, they're like, he's a fortune teller. Like, no, it's actually not it. God basically says, hey, tell my people this. And they're like, okay. And they go and tell people about that. It doesn't mean that they see into the future or anything like that. I don't know why I did that accent, but anyway. So this section is split into two sections, the major prophets and the minor prophets. And the words major and minor do not refer to importance of prophets. They just refer to the length of it, the length of their books. So the books of the major are just longer than the minor, right? As you can see, this is why the prophets cannot be read in chronological order, because they're all just like based on, oh, what's longer and what's shorter. So it gets really confusing trying to understand like what time period that these prophets are actually writing in. So there's three events for you guys to have like clues on like how to know what prophet's speaking in what time period, but these are the three main ones that will give us hints. There's the Assyrian Empire, the rise of the Assyrian Empire, the rise of the Babylonian Empire, and the rise of the Persian Empire. And these prophets would tell God's people God's message to them concerning these events. So So it can either be before the Assyrian Empire, which is the first one. It could be during the Assyrian Empire. It could be after that. It could be the Babylonian exile, like those type of things. It could be after all the exiles, and now they've returned to Jerusalem. There's like all of these things that just get really complicated, but you guys can figure it out. There's also like tons of Bibles that will tell you what time period these things are in, so that helps. And the Book of Lamentations is not a prophet. I just want to make that very clear. But it can be considered a word of wisdom, but it's not normally. It's considered like a part of Jeremiah because they believe that Jeremiah wrote this. They think that he was the author of it. And it makes sense because it was around the same time period and it was about the loss of Jerusalem. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's basically just a sorrowful writing. It's like something about grief. King David actually did a lot of laments in his time period in 1 and 2 Samuel. So, all right, so now we've come to the tips. These are my personal tips for reading the Old Testament. I'm definitely not going to go all the way through these because that would take too long and my voice is already dying. So I'm just going to go over a few of these things with you. I recommend, though, that you guys, if you do struggle at any way of reading the Bible, reading the Old Testament, even if you struggle in school, okay? These are my study tips, basically, as well. So just read through them. You know, it's awesome. I worked really hard on it, so yes, okay? So the first thing I kind of want to mention is that when you take notes, before I even get into that, I should just tell you the structure of my tips. So I have before you read the Bible, as you're reading the Bible or after you're reading the Bible, additional tips, and then just resources that I have for you guys. So before you go into the Bible, I think that it's important that you guys do not go in with an expectation of I'm always going to get something out of what I'm reading, because you're not. Like, there's going to be days where you're just going to be like, okay, well, that's that, you know, and that's totally fine. Like I said, remember in Luke 24, God sometimes withholds understanding for us. He doesn't reveal to us everything because he has a perfect time and a place for us to know those things. So just be patient and continue to seek him, okay? And then as you're reading, when you're taking physical notes, and do take physical notes, please. Like, that's been like the best thing for me. If I try doing it on a computer, it's awful. Like, it doesn't really help me a whole lot. I mean, if it works for you, it works for you, but I just recommend taking physical notes. But again, since this is a descriptive it's a book. Just the Old Testament is very descriptive, so I would just write down, like, the who, the what, where, why, how, you know, when. I think I said that, though. Just because that is like, you know, there's so many characters, you can get very confused, there's so many stories going along with everything, so just write those down. Write summaries of what you've read in your own words, that's always really good. And for those who are like a visual learner, get a journaling Bible, it's pretty awesome. I don't have one, but I'm not a drawer or anything, but if you guys want to, you can get a journaling Bible, that's good. And also rereading what you've read is super important because when you come across a passage and you're like, I don't get that, it may just be that you're just really tired that day or whatever. And then when you reread it, it just helps so much. Usually what I do is I would read through the chapter or whatever I'm reading that day. I just read through it. And then I would mark my Bible up. I'd be like, okay, this character has this color. Okay, this phrase is in here. Okay, got this. And I would mark up my Bible like that. And then I would go in and I would take physical notes. And this would help me kind of just to slowly understand it, because I'd have to slowly look through it and be like, oh, okay. And then like I write it down. And then I'd be like, okay, next part. Okay, yes, I got this. And that process is just really good. That's all I can say about that. It really helps you remember what you've read, helps you to dwell on it, to think through it clearly. And then the other tip that I have, read the Bible out loud with someone, either a group of people or a friend or whatever. And I know a lot of people, well, actually not a lot of people in here, but you guys and you, you guys are married. Read the Bible together with your husband or your wife. you know? Like, that's a really good thing. Like, just getting to know God and just simply reading it together. God's word is so powerful. It really is. And just reading it out loud does wonderful things. Let's see. I'm almost done, guys. So another thing that I get, a lot of the times people are like, okay, yeah, but the Old Testament is boring. The reason that it might be boring, and I'm not saying this is all the time, but the reason it could be boring is because you're making it boring. And I'm sorry, but that's true. God has made us in his own image, and he made us creative. And so we need to be creative when we read the Bible. You know, like, do something like draw a picture, or, you know, like, create a comic book of what you've read. I actually have like a list of ideas on the back here that kind of talk about what you could do. And I know my ideas are lame, but do something that's fun. In fact, okay, I'm almost done with 2 Samuel. I'm on like the last chapter. But every time I read from it, I'm like, geez, this sounds like a soap opera. Like, I just want somebody to create a video. I could do this, but I can't because I don't have those gifts. But like, just somebody create a soap opera film or a show or something about King David and his family. Like, I just think that would be really fun, you know? It's a very serious topic, but it would be funny, I think. So yeah, just do something like that. Like, I know it sounds like super weird because we're all like older and we're all like, I'm above that, but like, do something fun. There's something to know about learning through the eyes of kids. I watch a lot of kids shows. The majority of stuff that I know, I've made this down here, What's in the Bible with Buck Denver. Yeah, it's really good. You guys should watch that. Phil Vischer, the creator of VeggieTales. Okay, voice of Bob the Tomato is the one that does the show, and he's the one that goes through the whole Bible, right? And he takes it through it, and there's like, he goes through book by book, highlighting the main events and the characters with puppets, songs, and animation. And I know a lot of you are like, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. That's not my cup of tea or whatever. But when you don't understand the Bible and you're just like kind of a new Christian in a way, you're a baby and you kind of have to learn like a kid or a baby learns the Bible. And it's great. Like, it helps you remember things. Like, I recommend it. If anyone wants to watch it, just get in contact with me. But anyway, and then for those who have a busy life, the only thing that I recommend two things here, but most of the things that I recommend, pray to make God a priority in your life. So, like, there could be things that you're doing in your life, and God's like, I didn't call you to do that. Like, you're just doing that as busy work. And so you need to pray to make him a priority in your life. So listen to the Bible is one of the things that I really, because I know that a lot of people, well, maybe not a lot, now they just left. But, you know, people with kids, you know, people with kids, they have kids. I understand. I mean, I don't, but I do. I get it. But there are ways to learn about the Bible. So you can listen to the Bible. That's really great. There's free audio Bibles online. You can purchase one. I just purchased one, guys, on christianbook.com for like, what, $13? 79 CDs. $13. I was so happy. I don't even know what I'm going to do with that. I don't listen to the Bible. It's a dramatized version. So if anyone wants to borrow it from me, just let me know. And then schedule out a time each day where you can spend time reading and meditating on God's word. And I think that's what all of us should be doing anyway, is just scheduling out a time where we can just spend with God and get to know him. So now that that's all said and done, sorry that was like all over the place or whatever, but I have a decision for all of you to make. You all have a decision. Do you want to grow as a Christian in your relationship with Jesus? Or do you want to stay exactly where you are, having gaps in your understanding or of your beliefs or of Jesus and never growing? And I hope that you all choose to grow by reading more of the Bible and of the Old Testament. So that is it. So we're done.